Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time this week. I'm really excited about this one. Danny Howard, Radio 1 DJ presenter, has literally the best slot on Radio Specialist Radio now. Danny has been in the Radio 1 ecosystem for a long time and has had shows at many different times of the day, on weekends and evenings. And I've really seen him grow as a presenter over the years. I remember before I was DJing full time, Danny becoming a Radio 1 DJ. And it's been really, really nice to see how he's grown into the Radio 1 ecosystem. Also, how he's kind of grown as a producer and achieved the things that he's achieved as a producer, as a radio artist, a radio presenter, radio DJ, and also a record label owner. He's truly one of the pioneers for dance music in, not just in Great Britain, but in the world for our genre of music. So it's been an absolute pleasure to get him on the podcast. So I'm going to stop blabbering on and let you guys listen to the podcast. Without further ado, Danny Howard. Mr. Danny Howard, what's cooking, man?
Yo, good, mate. I'm glad to finally get the royal invite to the Will Clark podcast. I've listened many times and seen it on Instagram. So I was just waiting for that call. I was like, any week now, it's going to be my turn.
Mate, we are. We're like 160-odd episodes in, and I feel like there's some people that need to wait to come on because it's like, I need to get better. And like, when you're talking to radio royalty, as we call you nowadays, it's pretty hard. But yeah, how's life?
Yeah, good. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm much more comfortable being the interviewer than the interviewee. But I'm looking forward to the chat. Life's good.
Good. I guess that must be weird because you are always questioning people.
Well, it's the power of being able to take the conversation wherever you want to take it. That's what you hold as the interviewer, as the interviewee. It's hard to do that. But I don't know. It's just weird because I've interviewed so many people now. When I come the other side of it, I always find it. It's a bit like when you're a DJ on the dance floor. Yeah. It's just it becomes a bit like back to front because you're so used to being behind the booth. It's exactly the same, actually. So, it's all good. Look,
do you actually like being on the dance floor?
Only at certain, only to certain DJs or in certain venues. Yeah. My mates think they always take the piss out of me. Like, oh, too good for the dance floor now, are you? It's like, no, it's not that. It's just a weird, uncomfortable feeling being in the middle of the dance floor. That's why I DJ, because I can't dance. So yeah. That's my excuse anyway.
No, I can relate to that. Definitely. I think it's when you spend so much time in a club, although like the club is made to have fun, but it's not always, it's always, for me, it's always like, could I be doing a better job than they are?
I wouldn't have played that one. Oh, that makes it a bit dodgy.
Yeah, exactly.
What, though, when I am in the crowd, I don't, people ask me that, like, oh, would you play that? Or do you judge other DJs? And ultimately I don't, not technically anyway, obviously, like,
yeah.
I respond to what they play as a punter, and I was on the dance floor most recently at Printworks for the closing weekend. I actually played that night, but then later on my friends went down to watch Black Coffee, and it's one of the few big DJs I've never actually seen play a full set, so I had to get involved and experience it from the dance floor, and it's fair to say you can see why he is who he is, because he was unbelievable,
really.
So, yeah,
I've never seen him live. It's amazing what he's done as a kind of a fun, like as a DJ. He's not a DJ now. He's kind of gone to that level of like unbelievable.
He's a pioneer. He's pioneered a sound and taken a sound and amplified it worldwide. And you know, he'll always be an icon for that. But as a DJ, I was very impressed and absolutely loved it. So yeah,
man. I want to go back to the beginning of Danny Howard to what we know him as today, to we not know what you are today. I remember a long time ago driving to work when I was working, listening to the radio, and it was the Ibiza competition on who was going to play. I think it was an Ibiza Radio 1 weekend.
Yeah.
And you were doing, you entered the competition, and you were clear, like, this is no disrespect to everybody else, but you were clearly like had a lot of knowledge about the industry then. And you won the competition to play at Radio 1 in Ibiza, and now you are who you are and what you've achieved now. How does, if you look back and like really evaluate, and I don't know if you often do this because you're always because it feels like from an outsider's point of view, and I know you, but I don't know you that well. Like we've come in touch a few times, but I don't know you as a mate, if you know what I mean. So I kind of want to like get in there and be like, how does it feel to be where you're at now in your career?
It still feels surreal. I'd say I'm still the same person as I was back then, like still taking it all in and enjoying it, and you know, not changing who I am. Like, you know, still trying to be that humble guy from Blackpool. But yeah, it was the most significant point. It was the start of my proper career.
Yeah.
But you're right when you say that, like, I had knowledge of the industry limited, but it was because I'd back in Blackpool, where I'm from, but also Liverpool, where I went to uni, and Manchester, I used to put on my own events. So I was a promoter. And the only reason I was a promoter was so I could put myself on the lineups, because I wanted to be a DJ. So that was my sort of background and how I made money as a student, and sort of the year or two after I left uni, before that competition. And yeah, I feel very grateful for that opportunity. Mm. No one, they did do the competition a year after, and I think I was just lucky in, you know, the fact that they were looking for a new presenter to host Dance Anthems that they were bringing back, and they found me through this competition. So the story was there for me to be the first person to win a competition, then get a show. It was quite unheard of, really, especially because I had no radio experience as a presenter. But yeah, then to fast forward to where I am now, it actually took quite a few years to shake off that competition winner tag and just earn, as everyone should, earn the reputation for being, you know, a tastemaker, an accomplished presenter, and not just someone who got lucky and is riding the wave. You know, I'm 11 years deep into Radio 1 now, and I think if I didn't work hard at it, I would have got the hook a long time ago. But yeah, that's I always look back at it as a great moment. But there's been many great moments since as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, like, you have to work to kind of gain the respect of everybody in the industry, because what you class as what you did was luck. But like, I say this all the time, I feel like our whole careers are luck. Like,
you need the luck 100%, whether it's, you know, bumping into someone who owns a label that you want to release on, or, you know, a competition like I did. You wouldn't say Becky Hill owes her whole career to The Voice, was it, she was on? I mean, she's obviously accomplished so much more since and become, you know, the mega pop star representing dance music that we know of today. And it's similar. You know, we all need a breakthrough in some capacity. But you've got to be able to deliver when you do get opportunity. Because I don't think the opportunities come up probably more than once. If they do, then, you know, good on you. But that was my big opportunity. And because of the nights that I put on, and because the DJing that I did, and, you know, really wanting it as well.
Yeah.
Having the knowledge put me in a good position to be able to win it.
It's like completely life changing. I'm trying to think about it though. Like,
no, it is. It's like winning the X Factor for a DJ, literally. Because the brand of Radio 1's so big, especially when it comes to dance music. I've won this competition. Next thing, I'm playing a Schwaya next to, I think, Tiesto and Calvin Harris were on the lineup that year. And then to get the show, it was an absolute dream. Still is a dream. I still get the same buzz every Friday when I turn up for the show as I did when I, well, it was more nerves back then, but still get the same buzz and excitement.
Yeah.
But yeah, what it's been able to do is it's enabled me to have a platform to have my name out there every week to a massive audience, which has enabled me to, you know, build a career as a DJ and, you know, all the other things that I do.
Well, it's just goes to show how much of an institution the BBC is in general forms of, not just in the UK, like obviously it is the UK.
But even when I go to America, I actually did a show for 8 years on Sirius XM, which I know you'll be well aware of. And all people used to ask me about at Sirius was BBC. Yeah. Like, I remember doing an interview with Geronimo from Sirius, and his first question was, "So BBC Radio 1?" I'm like, "Hold on a minute, we're on another radio station here." So yeah, it is an institution worldwide, and you know that goes back to the days of when Pete Tong, his show, The Essential Selection, was the global shop window into what was the new hot dance music, and.
Yeah.
You know, that legacy and sort of everything that he built in those early days has remained until now, and people trust Radio 1 and its presenters as a source for new music, but a credible source as well. Even now, when we're battling against streaming services, YouTube, you know, everything else that provides content, I think we play even a more important role now. Because there's so much content, so much music, like we almost act as like a filter.
Yeah.
So, it's incredible to be able to be a part of it and still fly that flag.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about Spotify and or streaming generally, because I was going to ask that, is like, how have you found the change in radio and how you guys have kind of not been treated, but like you guys stand in the industry when it comes to everything else?
Well, the change when it was like everything went, this is really industry this, but when things went on air on sale. So like people that don't know, I think it was maybe like 2015, it was around that year. Say if an artist released a song, you would probably hear it on radio, certainly in dance music, 6 to 8 weeks before the release. And that was how they built up like pre-sales, and then they would shoot straight to the top of the chart or whatever. Now, obviously, if you hear it on the radio, the rule is it has to be available on streaming. And I found that really frustrating because as a tastemaker, you want people to listen to your show for you know, to hear an unreleased track by, you know, whatever artist. And that sort of, so the days of exclusives, unless it's like a new artist or a really independent label who don't give a shit, that is the case. And I really hated that because obviously everyone likes an exclusive. But the way people consume music's different now, and we have to accept that. Mm. People, if they hear it on the radio, they want to be able to add it to their own, you know, streaming playlists, and that's fair enough. But now our role has changed a little bit. Obviously, we're still tastemakers and acting as a filter to bring you what we believe is the best new music that is available out there. But we also are there to reflect the mood. So, for example, my show on a Friday night, 6 p.m., people have just finished work. They're getting ready for the weekend. They're in the cars driving home. They're, you know, they're on the way to wherever they're going for the weekend. And it's about just matching that mood, really. So that's, I guess, the role of my show in the radio, the music world, I guess. But also still, you know, introducing new artists and new music. It's like a dual role now. Yeah. And one that I really enjoy.
Yeah, because it's interesting from an outsider's point of view, and obviously somebody that releases music, how radio has kind of changed over the years, of the power of what radio can do to a record. But also for me, it's like, it feels like there's no, like years ago when you used to like get a Pete Tong Essential new record, like it was, you were the hottest new thing in the world. And like, it was the shit, if you know what I mean. Like, and it still is, if that makes sense. Or if you get a hottest new record, generally it is the thing. But I think because the way we consume music nowadays, it's not necessarily as powerful on a scale where this can change your life, but it adds to the story of a record, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like, it's the same with everything. Yeah. Like you get a Beatport number one totally. 10 years ago, and then you could build a whole world tour off that.
Well, we still have friends. We have still have friends that had one Beatport number one that are still the biggest in the world.
Yeah, exactly. But with radio, like, you know, hottest records, essentially new tunes, they still do count for a lot. It's still, you know, an amazing accolade to receive. But I think, whereas when you go on a streaming platform or you go on SoundCloud, it's like, you can just go down the rabbit hole. Yeah. It's like, you know, you get so far deep and you don't even know what's good anymore or what you like. Whereas radio, I guess, is a true reflection and like a real representation of what is actually good in terms of quality, in terms of, you know, trajectory of artists that you need to be listening to. And it's almost like chicken and egg with streaming services, because when you're pitching a record, they go, well, what radio or what DJ support has it had?
Yeah.
And then sometimes radio people are like, well, how many streams has it had? It's just like, so the thing with the BBC, it's just the way it is, isn't it? It's the official tagline that we're impartial, but I don't like to go around saying we're impartial, but we are. And that gives us an advantage that, you know, there's no, you know, I'm not just playing my mate's records. I'm playing it because I think it deserves to be on Radio 1. It deserves to have millions of people hear it. And, you know, I've had friends who are producers who've fallen out of me because they can't quite get the head around that I'm not playing their record because they're my friend.
Yeah.
I won't name names, but
come on, name them.
No,
I'm only messing.
I take it very seriously, the records that we play, and you know, it's the integrity and reputation that I've built over many years, that if people start realizing I'm only playing certain artists because they're my mates or they can give me something in return, which, you know, I'm not saying happens elsewhere, but with the BBC, that, you know what you're getting. And I think that's why when you do get a play on Radio 1, no matter what show, it still is a big thing. We still have a million listeners on my show alone. So imagine you get a play on daytime radio, that's, you know, multiple millions of listeners. Mm. I know on Spotify, it's like, you know, this many million people listen to my record. I don't question it, but I don't think the impact of that many million listeners versus a radio million listeners, which thinks a bit more like it's more engaged, more concentrated, can have a much bigger impact, especially when it comes to Shazams or you know, gigs and stuff.
Well, you're 100% right, because the thing with I'm not just saying all streaming services, but I'm using Spotify, for example, because they give you more data than what the others do. But let's say, for instance, even for me, I have like 30,000 monthly listeners in London. Okay. I can't even get a show in London.
Yeah. Like the numbers don't translate.
No, not at all. So, but like, I can guarantee you, like, if I had a big record on Radio 1 that was constantly being played, I know that I'd be getting booked in the UK for that. If that makes sense. So I think there is a correlation with radio where like people are listening. And I think because of the DJs, the presenters like you guys, that it makes it way more personable rather than just an algorithmic playlist that you just put on in the background and just gather streams. No one is listening to, even like at the gym, like my local gym back in the UK, that they play Radio 1 Dance, the dance radio station, and like there's a presenter on there, and like it's you listen and you kind of pay attention to what they're saying to you, and it feels way more personable than just a playlist going round and round in the background.
Yeah, not everyone likes a presenter talking, but I think there are people out there who trust certain presenters, whether that be Pete Tong or, you know, my show or Sarah or whoever, or, you know, anyone, our friends at Kiss and Capital, like people have the favorites that they tune into. And that, again, that's the difference with radio, is a bit of personality thrown in there. Mm. And what you just said about it translating into gigs, the most recent example that everyone would know is LF System Afraid to Feel last year was a track that we really championed on Radio 1. But they were. I remember them saying they weren't getting a look in at streaming services for the first few weeks.
Yeah.
Until the Shazam started coming in, and then they had X amount of radio plays, and then you could see the momentum. Then they came on board. So, but because we were playing it, because the tune was reacting, obviously promoters started to take notice and started to get gigs. And so I guess this whole point of this section of the conversation is like, and obviously I'm going to say radio is important, but it's, you know, the case studies are there, the facts are there. Like, I think everything plays its part in the ecosystem of a music release and the journey of a music release and growing as an artist. But radio is still very important, and it does certainly help artists grow and get more fans.
It's also a massive ego stroke for the artist. Like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, I'm being completely honest. When your record gets played on Radio 1 as an artist, it's like, and you've grown up, like for me, like I've grown up listening to Radio 1 since I was 8 years old, like especially like Pete Tong. So like, and you're just like, okay, when you, Sarah, Pete, plays the records, and Annie over the years, like, you're just like, it feels amazing. It almost doesn't matter what happens after that, because it's like you've achieved something, and it's just a nice achievement as an artist to have.
Yeah, I think it goes for any radio station. I'm not trying to be impartial here, but I'm just saying, the point I'm going to say is, when you get played a radio show, a real person has listened to your tune and decided that amongst all the other hundreds of tunes they received that week, they're going to play yours. So that is a real, like, deliberate action.
Yeah.
Whereas on a streaming service, you know, an editor or someone in the back end has been flicking through everything, and they look at your monthly listeners, they listen to the tune, they listen to the vibe of whether it would fit a particular playlist, and it's just a really quick process. Mm. I'm not saying that they don't listen properly at streaming service. I don't really know, but I'm just saying, like, for them to add a track to a playlist of loads of tracks is not really a big deal compared to someone like me who has 2 hours, which is about 30-35 tracks if I can push it. You know, those spaces are at a premium. Mm. So if your track's in one of those spaces, you know, it's a good thing. And, and you quite rightly should stroke your ego and be proud of yourself and pick yourself up, because it's a big thing.
Well, it's also like the placing of the record, right? There might be a record that you absolutely love that just doesn't fit on the show. And you're like, how the hell do I fit this on the show? Because I want to fit this on the show. But how often does that happen for you? Because it must happen a lot.
It does happen a lot every week. So, you know, there are tracks that are good enough and sort of meet the quality threshold, if you will, to get a play on the show. But it's just a massive jigsaw. It comes down to just what else is around, what else on the show, because it's quality, obviously. Is the record good enough? It's artist proposition. Are they a big name that the audience would be familiar with, or are they an artist that's hot and the trajectory's on the rise and we need to be supporting them?
Yeah.
Diversity, obviously, we need to make sure that we're being as diverse as possible. Mm. With my show, we're trying to get to a 50-50 gender split.
That's cool.
What's the other one? Oh, just vibe and texture, really, because on Dance Party, we play, you know, house, garage, drum and bass, and everything in between. So sometimes it's just a toss-up between two house records for this particular slot, and unfortunately one misses out. Happens a lot with hottest records. Mm. I wish the labels would speak to each other, because some weeks we're scratching around for a hottest record, and other weeks we have five records that could all be hottest records, but only one can be. So it really... you know, we talked earlier in this conversation about luck. It's the same when it comes to getting a play on radio.
Mm, totally. What's the process you go about for, like, programming a show? Because I know it's you and Jay, right?
Jay, my producer, and Josh, who works on the show. So the process is, in simple terms, if we go week by week, obviously sometimes labels send stuff up front, like hottest records, and the guests that we book is usually done like a month in advance. Yeah. And then like the actual music is on the weekly. So on a Monday and Tuesday, we'll listen to all the new music that comes in, and we'll put it in a folder that we then all listen to together on a Wednesday and decide what new tracks we definitely want to support. And we put them in a grid.
Sorry,
the show.
Can I back up on the listening side of thing on a Wednesday? Are you literally listening to like every single record, or obviously not every single?
Yeah. Episode? So on a Monday and Tuesday we listen individually.
Yeah.
That's where most of that's the most laborious bit and the most time consuming. So we do that individually, and anything that catches our ear we'll throw in to like the next phase of the filter, if you will, and then we either get together in Radio One, or obviously sometimes we have to do it on Zoom depending on where I am, and we just we spend an hour, 90 minutes just going through the short list of new music basically, and decide as a team what goes in, and then we have a document of what we call recurrence, which is what it says on the tin, tunes that we've supported over recent weeks that we want to give repeat plays. And that grid of 2 hours fills up quite quickly. So that's the process. And then Thursday is the production side, making the sections of the show, which are pre-built in different sections. And then Friday I turn up and deliver the show live to, you know, on air, which a lot of people just think I turn up with two USBs and plug in and just, you know, talk.
Wing it.
So it's actually for that 1-2 hour show, it's a week long process. Yeah. Pretty intense process actually, which takes up the majority of my time. But look, it's a huge platform. It's a big show, and it needs a thorough process.
Yeah, it must be actually nice to have a proper team around you as well, because I couldn't imagine doing that all by yourself as well.
No, it is, because look, we all know how much music gets released a week. I can't remember the exact figure, but I know it's a lot. And there's tunes that I might miss, that they flag, vice versa. Sometimes I might be not sure on a tune and they'll go, well, maybe we should give it a try because of X, Y, and Z reason. And it really is just like a democratic process. Is that the word? That's why it works really well. And that's why the show has the impact it has, because it's every tune we play is is well thought out and it's there because it deserves to be.
I feel like you've done every single show on BBC at some point in the specialist kind of realm, starting from...
Yeah, and some of the daytime as well.
Yeah.
When I first joined, I started doing dance anthems, which did that show for 5.5 years, but...
Was it that long you did it for?
Yeah, a long time. And then I got some depths, which is basically what we call when you cover a show.
Yeah.
And it was for Greg James, who was on Drive Time at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've never done radio before. I've been here 3 months and they put me on Drive Time. And I remember doing it because obviously it was a big opportunity, quite naively. And I knew straight away it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I remember speaking to a boss here, and I know this sounds mad, but I really don't want to do Drive Time. And he was like, oh, what do you want to do? I said, well, ideally, I want to end up covering Pete Tong.
Yeah.
I want to go down the specialist route. And yeah, that was a quick self-learning process of, just make sure you tell them what you actually want and don't just say yes to something because it's a big opportunity that might not be right for you. Because to do daytime radio, you've got to be funny. But I'm not very funny, Will. You know, I know my tunes. I know how to talk about music. And that's about it.
Well, I think like this is no disrespect to where you're at, but like I said, like with daytime, you almost have to be way more of a personality. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to you, but like Greg James is the Chris Moyles, the like Nick Grimshaws, like Scott Mills. Like,
yeah,
they're not known. And this is no disrespect to them. They're not known about them for their music. They're known for them, who they are. And you, Pete, Sarah, you guys are known for playing really fucking great music. It's two completely different roles.
And talking about it and having knowledge about it, be able to contextualize. That's the skills of specialist. And then daytime, it's being able to talk about something, anything, and make it funny and relatable, which takes a lot of wit.
Yeah.
And that's something I do not possess, but I have mad respect for those guys because I know how hard it is to put a mic up and talk and make it interesting.
Yeah. Greg James does a very good job at that. I really like listening to him.
He spots things in like, you know, that none of us would think of and turns it into something. So,
and then drags it out for God knows how long. And it still is amazing. I don't know how he does it.
Got to give the people what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So do you feel good in the spot where you're at now?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's the dream slot.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd get there because ultimately when I got to the slot before Annie, I thought that was me. You know, I'd reached, it was 8 p.m. as it was, and I was like, great, happy with this, because I never thought Annie would ever leave. And then when I found out she did, obviously, my first thought was sad because, like you just said before, I remember listening to Annie driving to my Friday gigs, you know, however many years ago, and I was a fan, really, so it was sad. And then when I got the call to do that show, it was an absolute dream, and it still is. As I used to cover Annie when she was off, and I used to finish that show just like completely buzzing because you can feel how big it is by the amount of people that listen and message in. So now to have it every week is unbelievable. So yeah, I'll just keep doing it for as long as they want me.
Love it. How long? Like, there must be. This sounds really weird for me to say this, but radio must get in the way of gigging life and touring life. How does that affect it?
Well, it's worth doing. So it's one of the biggest dance radio shows, certainly in the UK, maybe even the world.
No,
I don't know.
In the world, 100%.
It's worth sacrificing a Friday night gig. I can still DJ on Saturdays.
Yeah.
During the summer, I can still DJ in Ibiza on a Monday.
Yeah.
It doesn't really affect my DJ career. If anything, it you know, elevates it because I get that huge platform to have my name out there. And I guess the main challenge that I face is...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Growing a DJ career as a house DJ, yeah, which is what I play, and make sure people don't expect to hear what I always play on the radio, because not everything I play on the radio I play
totally
in my gigs, and vice versa. You know, yeah. I play mainstream dance music across the board on radio, whereas in my gigs I'll play slightly more underground house. Yeah. So, but I think, you know, I've been doing it long enough now for people to recognise that, but I remember at first it was a bit of a tough one,
especially if you're coming off dance anthems. Like, where?
Well, that was it. There were certain promoters that wouldn't book me because they thought I was going to turn up and play Avicii. Yeah. That was, you know, going from dance anthems to Friday nights. That first year, you know, we had to do a lot of groundwork for promoters to actually take me seriously. And you know, I'm not going to name brands. I was about to, but we set out a list of brands and parties that I really wanted to play, and eventually we hit all of them, which was great. But yeah, that was the main challenge, really. Other than the only challenge I think I face as a DJ being on Radio 1 is perception.
Mm.
So,
in what sense?
Yeah. Exactly what I just said. Like, people think I'm going to turn up and ruin the vibe and reputation of their party because I'm going to play, you know, some of the stuff that is right for radio.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm a DJ first, and sort of with an old school mentality, and I'm able in the sense that I'm able to adapt to whatever the situation or sound is.
Totally. So it goes from Radio 1 to then obviously touring the world, and then when does the whole record label talk start to get involved with all of this? Because it surely must be something in the back of your mind for a while.
What do you mean?
Starting your own record label.
When did it start?
Just kind of the process of like, why did you want to start it? And is it part of RCA?
Do you know what? No, it was.
Ah, okay.
So when I joined Radio 1, part of my management team were Paul Oakenfold and Judge Jules.
Yeah.
Which was quite surreal because Jules left as I joined,
yeah,
and he just wanted to really help me. And one of the things he said I should do is do a record label, and Sony were interested in doing it with me. And I sort of walked into it completely like oblivious to what it would require, in terms of, you know, hours, but also I had no experience. Because of my position and because of Jules's contacts, I was able to get this label within RCA Sony, which is ridiculous. But our first release was 99 Souls, the Girl Is Mine, which I think got to number 3 in the official chart. So we were off to a flyer.
That's crazy.
I thought, this is great. this is easy. But then quite quickly realized how hard it was going to be. And we did that for about 4 years. But I, you know, I wanted to concentrate on my DJ and the radio, and it became less of a priority to do the label. And we did have some good releases, and I did enjoy it to an extent, but it came to an end, and I realized that actually what I wanted to do was do it independently and just release like club records without the pressure. Because when you're in a major system, they want hits and they want results and they want them fast. Whereas as an independent, you've got much more creative control and freedom. And that's when I started Nothing Else Matters in 2019, as an independent. Linked up with the Tool Room guys, good friends of Mark, and you know, they helped me with the background in the back end of it. And yeah, it's been really enjoyable to sign records that I can play on my sets and also sign new artists as well as established artists and not get asked questions. So yeah, it's good. It's just running a label, and also I can release my own records as well when I do eventually make them. I think having a label, having an outlet is important, and something that I think every DJ should have if they want to do it, obviously. But it's still going strong, and we've got some good releases this year. So we'll see.
Sick, man. Yeah, I think a label is really important in general careers as well. I think there comes a point when there's a ceiling on somebody else's label that you can kind of reach. I don't know if you agree with me on that. But I think for me, it's mostly about branding and how do you want to brand yourself for the rest of your career. And I think on somebody else's label, you can't necessarily do that unless you're just fully in on that brand.
I think if you're a new artist and you start your own label and only release your own tunes on your own label, it's going to take a very long time, unless you make a hit, to break through. The benefit of releasing, I mean, it's an obvious statement to make, but the benefit of releasing on established labels is you get fast track to their audience that's already engaged. So I would recommend any new artist to, you know, still have your target labels and work towards releasing on them. And then when you eventually get your own fan base, that's when you're going to have more impact from releasing your own records. Mm. And that's what I did as well. As a producer, that's exactly what I did. I remember I always actually wanted to release on Tool Room, and I had a release on their Shadow Child's label. I can't remember what else now, but just labels that wouldn't give me a look in before. Yeah. All of a sudden, I kept working towards it, and that helped, especially the Tool Room releases.
They're a great label, man. They do amazing stuff as a label generally. Them and Defected as independents.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that was the other one, Defected, and I finally got my release. That was about 5 years of demos, that one. But yeah,
it's people don't realize the brutalness of trying to sign a record.
And that is the problem of releasing other labels, because obviously first you've got to get them to like it, and then you've got to wait quite a lengthy period before you can slot into their release schedule. But look, it's when you get a Defected or a Tool Room or one of those labels, it's worth it.
Yeah, I guess the amazing thing now with releasing music that I don't know if you necessarily had like 10 years ago, but you have the ability of it to do well without having a brand behind it to a certain extent. It's like everyone is way more accessible than it was 10 years ago. I feel like there was a lot more gatekeepers 10 long ago, before streaming, before social media. You kind of needed that record label that kind of had the contacts, you had the radio pluggers, had all of that. Whereas now I feel like it's so much more easier to be an independent artist.
Yeah, no, for sure. And
did you nearly just fall off your chair?
Yeah, because the dog was jumping up at me. What do you want? He wants attention. Been asleep. I mean, but all I'm saying is, whilst it's great that there are label distribution deals and it's easy to set up your own labels, like still go for those Hot Creations or Tricks, Defected, whatever. Somewhere that's already got an audience to hear your music.
Yeah, it's an absolute game changer. It can, well, look what Patrick's done in the last 3 years with Trick.
I know. But that's because he was ready to do it, which is why he was able to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
He'd already grown a fan base through Hot Creations.
Yeah, he's absolutely taken over. It's amazing what they've done. Ibiza residencies.
Yes.
You've been playing in Ibiza for a long time. You start your residency last year? Or at Amnesia?
The Amnesia one, yeah. So my first residency, it wasn't a proper residency with my name above the door, but it was at Pasha.
Yeah.
2014 or 2015. Yeah, it was pure Pasha.
Mm.
It was Martin Solveig and Bob Sinclair headlining alternate weeks.
Yeah.
And I was the resident every week for 20 weeks.
Damn.
Just like in the warm-up slot. It was insane. An amazing club to play. So I did that for like 2-3 years. And then I went to sort of doing a bit of everything.
Mm.
And then last year, got a call from Neil at Amnesia asking if I wanted to host the club room, Gorgon and Sunny in the Terrace, and I could curate it. And that was really fun to curate. Booked a lot of new artists that had broken through during COVID. In fact, we gave a lot of artists their first Ibiza show, which was such a nice thing to be able to do.
It's amazing for Amnesia to be your first Ibiza show as well as an artist.
Yeah,
it's pretty.
Exactly.
It's pretty amazing.
This year, the we're changing the structure. So rather than going having two rooms, we're going to condense it just to the terrace.
Nice.
It's just going to be myself, Gorgon, and Sunny every week. Sad that we can't curate and book guests, but there's only so many hours in the night.
Yeah.
We're just going to do that for 15 weeks and. I'm excited because sometimes when I finish my set in the club room, I go in the terrace late on and sort of jump on with the guys, and it was always a buzz to play that room. So I'm looking forward to doing that every week. But Ibiza, man, I was there for IMS recently, and it's just every time I'm there, I'm just like, I need to move here. I never actually do, but maybe one day. But I'm going to be there a lot. So if you're in Ibiza, I'm going to plug it now. Mondays, every week. So.
How is the traveling? How do you find the traveling for you? I know it's only Ibiza, it's only a couple of hours away, but like with your schedule of radio as well and that being the full-time kind of focus, how is that?
As long as I'm back in London on a Friday afternoon by about 3 p.m., I know I'm fine. So, sometimes I do Ibiza Monday, Mallorca Tuesday, and then fly back usually Wednesday unless I got something else on.
What's Mallorca? What's the Mallorca pie?
BCM.
Okay.
Every Tuesday. So yeah, I just curate that. And when we first started Ibiza last year, because I thought Mondays, it's calm, it's a Monday, but I actually forgot that Friday radio, Saturday festival, sometimes Sunday festival.
Yeah.
So by the time I get to Ibiza, I'm like knackered. Then I have to go to Mallorca on the Tuesday. I'm making it sound like it's awful, but it's brilliant. I'm not moaning. It's intense. But
it's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work, and people don't realize. It's like, I think people do realize now because with social media, you kind of explain. But like, even for me, yesterday, my flight got cancelled. Was stuck at the airport for 7 hours. Got home, they lost my luggage. Like, it's not always plain sailing.
That's never fun. I've had that one before.
It's so annoying.
No, I enjoy it. I mean, I try and do hand luggage wherever I can, mate. Yeah.
So do I. They made me check my bag, though, because it wouldn't fit in the overhead. I was on one of these, like, twin propellers.
So
they were like,
favorite.
Yeah, it's not good.
So, you know, I'm fine with traveling. Used to it. Don't mind it. Get a podcast on, do a bit of work. The usuals.
What do you listen to?
The Will Clark podcast, of
do
course.
You actually?
Sometimes, yeah, or listen to the promos, sometimes making tunes, whatever. Sometimes I read a book, just honestly. And a lot of the time during the summer, obviously, sleep.
Yeah.
I've become an expert at sleeping upright.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what you're like with it.
But. I'm so bad at sleeping. I can sleep on planes, but I can't. I'm not good at sleeping in a bed. My body just like wakes me up at certain times. And
so
you got
no chance in a chair then.
Yeah, it's fucking annoying, but it's all good. I don't know how long ago it was, but you started a podcast.
Planet B.
Yes.
Yeah,
what happened with that?
It was a video podcast. In short, it was a conflict with my BBC contract, basically.
Okay.
I wanted to do something because I still do want to do something like that. Because obviously I'm known for playing music on radio, but I also want to, especially with how big dance music is now and, you know, all the nuances and talking points and everything that goes on, like having a round table, if you will, conversation with different guests about cultural topics and also music and just having a bit of a laugh, I felt was missing. And so I started that Planet B show. But unfortunately, yeah, just couldn't continue because I wanted it to be available as a podcast, but I couldn't have it as an audio. It had to be only video. I couldn't have it as an audio version, sadly. And everyone kept asking me, like, where's the audio version? I was like, I just can't, just because of the complexity of my BBC contract. But look, one day maybe we'll see.
Yeah, man. I really enjoyed it. It was interesting. And to be fair, it was always, like, for me, it was always a goal to have this. This obviously is a video as well, but, like, I've always had the goal to do an in-person podcast rather than on Zoom. I feel like there's a level of when you're in the person is completely different. It's completely different.
We had a good laugh and we'd all go for a beer and a pizza after and be friends. It's great.
it's definitely a goal. But it would be nice to see it. So, Mr. BBC boss, make it happen.
Yeah. No, I'm not complaining.
No, totally, man. Are you looking forward to the summer?
Yes, can't wait. Obviously, Ibiza.
Yeah.
Lots of good festivals. I'm going to do it differently this year. Last year, the first year, sort of post-pandemic, I know we don't like to say that word anymore, but it basically was the first full summer we had. Yeah. So, fair to say, I got a bit too involved and indulgent. This year we'll not be doing the same. I will still be enjoying the shows, but you will not see me around as many tequila bottles. So yeah, no, looking forward to it. It's gonna be another good one. And it feels like everyone's ready for it. Like Ibiza I feel like the whole world's going to Ibiza this year.
Yeah, it's come around quick. I feel like this is realistically the first time where everything is fully open in the world, which is weird to say because even last year, not everywhere was fully open to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And
no, exactly. Yeah.
So I think this year is going to be, I remember last year, even like there was a lot of my American friends that just lived in Ibiza all summer. So I think it's going to be more so that as well this year.
I'm
looking forward to it. It's going to be interesting to see what's on the island this year.
Yeah, for sure. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm there 4 or 5 times, I think, this summer.
Nice.
So yeah, should be good. It's always nice to go out. It's weird because I used to live there, so it's weird going from, I did like seasons living out there and then stopped going for like a number of years and then
as a worker or as a DJ.
Yeah, I was a resident out there. I had a residency for like 4 summers.
Nice.
When I was like 18. So yeah, it was realistically you're a worker, right? It was like I was a resident in Kanya and Orange Corner. So
I know those places.
Yeah. So it was like it's very different when you're going as a DJ or as you're a worker there, really. And I used to do, you know, Tom Brown that does the Mambo Studios.
Yes, of course, yes.
I used to work with Tom and help him at the studios, and we used to do a bunch of other like radio stuff on the island. So like always like, but then when you go as a touring DJ, it's like completely different experience.
Well, you don't really see much of it.
No, you're just in and out. Are you based out of London?
Yeah, in London. Been here 10 years now.
Yeah.
Everyone always is surprised. Everyone always says, "You're in London." I've been here 10 years. I think people just think I live up north.
Still in Blackpool.
Yeah, I mean, I did want to. My goal was not goal, but my plan was to always move back up there. But yeah. I don't know. I quite like it here now. Maybe I'll move to Ibiza once and for all at some point. We'll see.
How would that work though with the radio?
Well, I was thinking about doing it this year, but just fly back on a Friday, do the show, and then go back.
Yeah,
literally.
Would be nice.
Or try and persuade my boss to let me do it from Ibiza, but I don't think that would happen.
Use the Mambo Studios and do it live or pre-record it.
Yeah. Well, never pre-record. It's always live. So
always live. Yeah. How does always that work? Live. Like, how does that work? Because with regards to like holidays and taking time off and things like that.
I mean, I'm allowed holidays. I get 5 contractually a year, but I never really take them all because I hate having time off. I love doing the show. I try my best not to have any Fridays off. Sometimes, I mean, last year I had to have quite a few off because I had a backlog of weddings I had to go to. But this year, nothing planned, I don't think, to have off yet. The buzz of doing it live is like nothing else. It's as close as you're going to get as a DJ to playing to, you know, thousands of people, except you're talking to millions, but you can't see them. It's a really strange dynamic, but you just can't quite replicate the same energy pre-recording a Friday night show and a Tuesday morning. Yeah. It's just not the same. So, I just see the messages come in, like live interaction, knowing like what you're doing is having a positive effect for, making someone feel good. There's no better feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine the whole texting is interesting. Do you ever get, I know this is the most bait question ever, but is there ever times when you're nervous, or is there always butterflies at the start, or is it just like it's a walk in the park now? You're just so used to it.
I'm pretty well practiced. Whereas I used to have like a big thick pile of papers with a script for everything that I'm going to say, now I basically just have like one sheet of paper. So I don't really know what I'm going to say until I get to that link. It's the buzz of it. I could be having the worst day ever. As soon as I turn up to Radio 1 and we're ready to do the show, it just completely switches and I'm up for it and ready to go. So I hope I never lose that. Maybe if I do, then I'll know it's time to go. But I don't really get nervous. I get more nervous about. I did a talk at IMS.
Yeah.
To a room of about 30 people. I got more nervous for that than I do talking on the radio. It's different when you can see the faces.
It is, isn't it? And I think it's like, I don't know. It's the same people ask you it all the time with DJing, and when you're just so used to it, it's just like you're just used to it. So you just get on with it, and it is what it is. But when it's something that you don't do often, it's always a strange concept. Which
exactly.
What did you talk about at IMS? I haven't seen any of the...
It was about radio. It was about broadcasting.
Yeah.
So it was obviously something that I can talk about for hours. So it was fine. It was fine. Just at the start, it was more I couldn't believe people came to listen.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, you're in Ibiza and it's 28 degrees outside and the bar's open. What are you doing in here? But it was good and great to see people, taking a genuine interest in it.
Was it good this year? Because it's all changed. It's changed quite a lot, right?
Yeah, it's at Destino. It was the best IMS I've been to.
Really?
A lot of people there, good vibes, great topics of discussion. It sort of signals the start of the season. So, everyone's in great spirits and optimistic about, the next 6 months.
Damn, the season's starting early.
It gets early and early. When I first went to Ibiza, I remember I went to Carl Cox opening on the first Tuesday of July.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if he was still doing his residency, he'd probably open like now, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
May.
Well, I think last year, the first party was like end of April.
Yeah.
Well, I guess like, when was IMS this year? It was last week.
29th of April.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad. They're rinsing that.
Early.
Making that summer money. Don't blame
exactly,
them.
Yeah,
don't blame them.
Squeezing it out of us. Squeezing. Yeah,
definitely, man. Mate, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm glad we finally got to do the talk.
Good.
I want to...
Thanks for having me.
No worries. I want to kind of wrap it up and kind of get a bit of... how can people send you music? What's the best way for people to get music to you? For radio, I know it's kind of your inboxes are full all the time, but like, how for a new artist out there that's trying to get music to you, how are they going to do that?
Email music@djdannyhoward.com, as simple as that. And I would say the only rule is not to send a wee transfer. And the simple reason is because I have so much music. I'm flicking through emails and I just want to be able to hit a link to be able to stream straight away.
Yeah.
So something that doesn't require me to download a zip or whatever. Honestly, it sounds petty.
No,
I know, it's only a minute, but literally every second when I'm going through music counts.
Have you heard of this new platform Trackstack?
Yep, yeah, heard of it. I'm starting to use it for the label actually. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I mean, at the moment, you can't expect everyone to be on that platform, but maybe one day. I mean, it'd make my life a lot easier if it was in all in one place. So
game changer, man. It's apt because I'm terrible at promos. Like I'll be honest, I don't really listen to promos. Like unless somebody sends me something personally, like the whole in-flight thing, I'm kind of stuck with. Do you go through in-flight or any of those?
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, in-flight's great because it means I can just scandal. You know, blast through a load of tunes in one hit. It's funny, Eat Everything said that. He said like sometimes I can't remember where I was DJing now, but he was on and he's asking me what a few tunes were because he's like, yeah, I don't really listen to promos. Yeah. In fact, he asked me to send him a Dropbox of new stuff because I guess he's just playing his own stuff and his label and stuff he's already acquired. But as a radio,
you have to
dance DJ. It is the job.
Yeah, I guess so. For me, it was more so like a time thing where I would spend a couple of hours listening through promos and maybe get one record that I'm like in love with, and then I could go on Beatport and spend a couple of hours and get a bunch of records that I absolutely love, or Bandcamp, or kind of just scoot around the internet and find some stuff that I really like. It was just kind of like a efficiency thing for me. Where
I do all that as well though, because especially my promos, I always think of it as, if I'm getting this record, so is Pete, so is Sarah, so is Capital Dance, so is Kiss. Like, we're all getting the same records. Yeah. And I like to find, you know, little gems. So I'll always go on, have a look around. I'll spend a few hours a week dedicated to Bandcamp, SoundCloud, see what's popping. Beatport, you just mentioned, is actually my secret weapon because they have the pre-order function on there, which is a great way to obviously see what's coming. And you know, not every label or artist can afford a promo company.
Totally.
So sometimes you can find new artists who've made a wicked track on Beatport pre-order. I make sure I don't just rely on records coming in. I'll go out and seek, and also on social media, see what's popping, see what other DJs are playing. It's long, but when you find something, it's worth it.
Well, I guess it's also your job. So it's like,
it is the job.
You have the one responsibility of bringing dance music to the nation of Great Britain and the rest of the world.
My ears are always open.
It's an impressive job. What's your relationship with radio pluggers?
Good. Has to be, because ultimately they're obviously, one goal is to get you to play a record, but they sometimes are the gateway to getting big guests on for promo. They're the ones that have the conversations. You know, I do have personal relationships with a lot of the artists that we play, which is great, but pluggers are a very important cog in the wheel and in the process of getting records played. And And also, the act is quite a good reminding tool, because, you know, 2 weeks can pass by, you've forgotten about a record, and sometimes they just give you a little nudge, oh, thanks for playing this again. You're like, oh, yeah, that was a good record. And
put it back in.
It's important to maintain healthy relationships with pluggers.
Yeah. I guess, with going back to the LF System record, it doesn't happen often when everyone gets behind a record like that. In the sense of you, Pete, Sarah, and Daytime, or Dance Anthems, Daytime. Like, how does that start for an artist? Like, what kind of does that take to kind of get to that point?
Special record. Yeah. And more often than not, the artist doesn't even know it themselves.
Totally.
But it literally is just timing, having a special record, and that's pretty much it. Both of which is hard to create deliberately. It's give yourself the best chance, I guess. You just got to make sure the one thing you could do is get as many other DJs playing it as possible. That's one way.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not always guaranteed because you can definitely manipulate that. Look, a special record is a special record. It's always going to cut through. So I guess when you're making your music, you just got to have that in the back of your mind. Like, is this different to what's out there?
Yeah.
Does it sonically fit into what is current?
Yeah.
And if you can nail those two things, then you got a good chance.
Do you guys look at like the response of the listeners as well? Of like, okay, when we've got a bunch of people texting in about this record when it comes in or when you guys play it, is that like a factor of how long that gets played for?
Not exclusively. Obviously helps. I mean, when a track is a hottest record, but then obviously the artist and the label know,
yeah,
and you know they could, if they wanted, just get all their mates to text in and make it seem like, which I'm sure does happen. But you can just tell. Ultimately, it comes down to, does it sound good on the show?
Yeah.
Does it fit the vibe? And you know, we'll keep playing it. If it starts to pick up steam on Shazam, or we're getting feedback of other DJs playing it, or if other radio shows are playing it, then that gives us more motivation to have the confidence, that it works.
Yeah.
So that's there's multiple factors that go into whether we play a record again or not.
Yeah. Love that, man. Love that. So, right. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great.
Man. I hope your summer is as good as it sounds it's going to be.
Me too.
Hopefully we can catch up in person at some point over the summer.
I'm sure we will. Thank you so much for having me on.
Peace, man. Keep safe. See you soon.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. And that is a wrap. Big love to Danny for coming on. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, please share. Please subscribe. Please give us a review. Keeps the podcast going. Keep safe. See you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.